Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Roberto Rojas, and special guest, Mr. Jorge Camaño, a journalist from Fox Sports and ESPN, as we break down the 2014 Cinderellas of the World Cup, Costa Rica. Gentlemen, I'd like to thank both of you for joining me tonight. Jorge, I'd like to start out first by asking you, what's your specific...
Well, I'm being I was born in Costa Rica, and I went to the U.S. When I was about 12, 13 years old, and I came back 6 years ago. I worked for the Costa Rican Federation doing a coaching license for all the people that used to do the same kind of work, like training or coaching, without the license. So when I came back to Costa Rica, I had a meeting with the federation, and we start this course where we have lots of people love to coach kids, and we start working with that. So in the meantime, I was working with Santos. It's a team, first division Costa Rican team, and I was the general manager. We did really good, actually. We working with a small team or a team that has lots of limitations, we did really good. Actually, we went to the finals against Herediano, which is one of the best teams in Costa Rica. And after that, we started working with kids all over Costa Rica and really close to the Costa Rica national team.
I'm just going to jump in here, Jorge, and now talk about the history of Costa Rica. You know, obviously, before we mention the big one that happened 4 years ago in Brazil, I want to look back at their history. 1990, they qualified for the first time, going to the round of 16 in surprising fashion, I would say. Then they went back to a World Cup in 2002 and in 2006, where they finished in the group stage. And then came the magical year of the summer of 2014. You know, I think for many of us here, and of course, Joe, myself, and probably the rest of the world, you know, didn't really expect Costa Rica to get a point in this group, let alone qualify all the way to the quarterfinals. You know, they displaced three world champions, Uruguay, Italy, and England. They won their group. They ended up beating the Greece on penalties in the round of 16, and then, you know, battle it all out against the Netherlands, where they lost on penalties in the quarterfinals. But really, you know, left Brazil as, you know, the Cinderella story, and everyone, you know, around the world began talking about Costa Rica, about this surprise team. I mean, I guess the first question to ask you is, you know, what has been the reaction, I guess, to Costa Rica now that they've made another World Cup second year, 2 years, national team after they qualified?
Well, we were all expecting this after the great World Cup we played in Brazil. And actually, this Cinderella story, it started back in 1990, like you said, in Italy, because that was our first World Cup. And nobody expected anything from Costa Rica, and we did really, really good. I mean, we had a tough group, and We came out second after Brazil, and then nobody was expecting that. So at that time, we had players that nobody knew in the world. I mean, Gabelo Conejo, Roger Flores, Juan Callazo, Oscar Ramirez, which is today's our national team coach. So it was really good since the beginning in 1990. We didn't do that good back in the 2002 and 2006, but Brazil was just magical. I mean, with that opponents that we had, nobody expected anything from us. I mean, like you said, not even to get a draw in one of the games, and we came out first in that group. So, and then what happened with the Greek team and getting beat by penalties against Netherlands, it was really, really tough for us. We were expecting more. Once you're there, you're like, okay, we can go all the way. But I mean, for Costa Rica, it was crazy. I mean, the people, nobody worked the day that we had the games. Everybody was on the street celebrating. And it was really, really good. I mean, something magical. So after that, this qualification was a little bit different. We felt like we were really good. We had pretty much the same team. We changed the coach. Jorge Luis Pinto went to Honduras, and we had Oscar Ramirez. He used to play all the time, being the coach of Alajuelense, the same style. I mean, the same formation. He's pretty much the same school as Jorge Luis Pinto. So we trust him. We knew that we were gonna do good, and we came out. I mean, actually, this was probably the easiest time that we qualified to a World Cup, because the other four times was really, really tough. We had lots of problems, and at this time, we didn't qualify until the last game, pretty much. But still, we were all the time in first, second place, and we knew that we were going to do good and that we were going to be in Russia.
Now, Jorge, I do want to fast forward to qualification for this 2018 World Cup. Finishing second in CONCACAF behind Mexico, suffering only two losses, one to Mexico and one on the last day where they suffered the 2-1 loss to Panama, which thrust Panama into their first ever World Cup. You look back on qualifying for them, though, they did not close as strongly as they started with two victories before they even faced the Mexican national team in 6 points at the beginning of the hex. When you look at the end of the hex for them, though, they closed with a 1-1 draw at home to Mexico. They closed with a 1-1 draw at home to Honduras, and then the 2-1 loss at Panama, like I had mentioned. Does it concern you that they not necessarily stumbled in, but they kind of coasted in after they earned that 2-0 victory over the U.S. In New York at Red Bull Arena, that they kind of coasted in a little bit to qualification, knowing that they were pretty much there?
Yeah, we feel that everybody relaxed after the game in the U.S. when we beat the United States. We felt like we were already in, and that did really bad to the players and the coaches and even the fans. I mean, everybody felt like, okay, we're in, and we were not. So the game against Honduras, it was really tough. We were losing. Actually, we scored the goal in the 96th minute by Kendall Watson, and that's when we qualified to the World Cup. But I feel like everybody was like relaxed and felt like we were already in. But you're right. I mean, the last four, probably six games, we didn't play that well. I mean, even the last game that we played in Spain, we lost 5-0, and the team is not playing well. I mean, there is a lot of work to do. Everybody's really concerned about the situation right now. We're waiting for the games in March that we're going to be playing in Europe, and waiting for the list. We have some problems with players. Lots of our players that play in Europe, they're not getting a lot of minutes, and that's always a concern. I mean, it's nice to have players in the big leagues and all the stuff. But if they play, I mean, if they're not playing, then it's not going to do good to your country. And that's the problem that we have right now. Even Brian Ruiz, which is one of the best players that we have, he started playing 2 or 3 weeks ago. He had a lot of problems with the coach, the Sporting of Lisboa. And I mean, not only him, but Joel Campbell is being hurt. He's just getting back to training. I mean, there is a lot of good players that we have right now that they're not playing enough minutes or they're not having the best time of their career. So it's going to be tough. I mean, we have 4 months to change this, and we hope that they do something good, because right now it doesn't look that good.
You know, and you look back on qualification, they only scored 3 goals over their last 3 matches there. And of the 3 goals, 2 of them were late. Like you had mentioned, the Kendall Watson goal in the 95th minute against Honduras to earn the 1-1 draw. But they also did the same thing because Marco Ureña, the LAFC player, had to score in the 83rd minute against Mexico to offset an own goal by Gamboa to earn a point there as well. So looking back, you only had 8 goal scorers and scored only 14 goals in the Hex. You know, can they repeat what they did in 2014 with the minimal goal scoring they're getting right now? Because averaging a goal and a half a game, I don't think is going to cut it against the likes of Serbia, Brazil, and Switzerland.
Well, that's the way they play. I mean, Costa Rica, and we learned that from Jorge Luis Pinto. If you look at our games, Costa Rica never get that kind of win where you say, well, we beat this team, we scored 4, 5, 6 goals. That doesn't happen. And this Oscar Ramirez, the coach, Jorge Luis Pinto, he scores 1 goal, and that's it. You have to just defend the goal and play defense, and that's all they do. And it's a real problem because, I mean, the way you think about the games and the way you think you're going to play changes when you get the other team to score a goal, and then, like I said, I mean, everything changes, and then you have to try to score to save a point or save the game, and that's the problem with Costa Rica right now. I mean, we have Marco Ureña, which is the guy that plays up front, and he's not the type of guy like we used to have, like Paulo César Wanchop or Hernán Medford, that they score lots of goals, and you knew that you have to take care of that guy because he's going to score any time. That's not the case with Marco Ureña. And right now in Costa Rica, they got, we have 10 or 11 games into the National League, and they have Jonathan McDonald, who plays for Alajuelense, and he has 10 goals in these 11 games, and everybody is expecting Oscar Ramirez to get this guy to the national team to see if we can change that, because the way it looks right now is not that good, and we have 2 or 3 players that maybe can change the history of the scores, the goals that we scored, that there are not too many.
You know, you're right. I mean, it's tough to see, you know, this Costa Rica side really convincing a good win, like you said, Jorge, like a 4-5-0. But it's 5-time world champions. They have Switzerland, you know, a team that really did very well in European qualifiers, and they have Serbia. And I'm just rounding up the matches real quick in order. They play Serbia first on the 17th, then they play Brazil on the 22nd, and then they play Serbia on the 27th as well. Jorge, I mean, I'll just ask you this first, and I'll pass it over to Joe afterwards. You know, of these 3 games, I mean, obviously, I think for any team, you want to play Brazil. I think that's their toughest game. Would you think that is the toughest game for this Costa Rican side, or maybe the most important, or which one of these 3 do you think is the biggest one, I think, for Oscar Ramirez's men?
To me, it's going to be the first game against Serbia, which is in the paper, it may look as the easiest team that we're going to face in the World Cup, because if we don't do good against Serbia, we're done. I mean, playing Brazil and playing Switzerland is going to be really, really tough. So if we do good and we beat Serbia and we go to the second game against Brazil, knowing that we have 3 points and hopefully Brazil has 3 points too, we can probably think about getting to the 3rd game alive. And that's all we want. I mean, get to the 3rd game alive. If we don't do good against Serbia, and obviously Brazil is really tough, The third game is probably going to be just a friendly game. Okay, for us, that's the way we see it. We know that the most important game in the World Cup is going to be the 17 against Serbia. If we beat Serbia, we have hope that we go to the second round. But if we don't do good against Serbia, and then we got Brazil in the second game, it's going to be really, really tough.
Joe, Costa Rica defied the odds 4 years ago, beating three world champions in Uruguay, Italy, England. Can they do the same this year around? I mean, what do you see perhaps a repeat of 2014 in this group with Switzerland, Serbia, and Brazil? And also, what's an important or maybe the hardest game for this Costa Rican side?
You know, I can see it because the roadmap to the knockout stages, just like Jorge said, maps out the same way as it did in 2014 for them. And the key is to start that first game. Now, granted, in 2014, their first game was against Uruguay, which at that time, you know, they had Cavani. Luis Suarez was playing very, very well at that time. You know, so it was a much taller task. I think the Serbia team can be had by the Costa Rican side. And you've got a lot of players here on this Costa Rican team, like Brian Ruiz at 107 caps. Celso Borges, who plays at Depo, who has 106 caps. Keylor Navas as well, who has plenty of experience, as we all know. Can contribute experience-wise because they were all part of that 2014 team. So the key here, the roadmap is the exact same way. It's Serbia first and foremost. Get a win there. Get the 3 points. Not necessarily that Brazil would be a friendly, but they can afford to draw or lose. You know, we look back on 2014, Costa Rica managed the 1-0 win over Italy with a Brian Ruiz goal. So they... You know, if they can steal a goal from Brazil like the way they did against Italy, is the key. Is the key to be able to go in alive against Switzerland, and possibly Switzerland might be in that same position where they need a win. Then it's going to be it's going to probably be the most entertaining match for Costa Rica. But I think the most important match is the first one against Serbia on the 17th. So, you know, Jorge, I want to jump back in here and go back to you about the players to watch in this tournament. We've talked about Marco Ureña, who actually led them in World Cup qualifying scoring with 3 goals. We talk about the experience of Brian Ruiz. We talk about Joel Campbell, who's now at Real Betis. He's got 14 goals and 74 caps, been used kind of as a super sub in recent matches for Costa Rica off the bench. We talk about the greatness of Keylor Navas and what he's done at Real Madrid and the trophies he's won since the 2014 World Cup. So the team, even though you may think to yourself, oh, you know, no one really knows Costa Rica, Costa Rica is very well known. And there are some very well-known players that play currently in Europe, all the ones that I had mentioned. So I want to ask you, is there a player that maybe we haven't talked about yet? There's one player that I see currently, and I want to ask you if he's even going to make the team based on his age, and that's Christian Bolaños. Will he be there for this team? And give me a name that maybe we don't talk about much that we need to keep an eye out for this tournament.
Yeah, well, if I have to give you a name, chance to play in this March friendlies, and then you guys will get to know him. He's really, really good. He's having a great time right now. He's not that young. He has a lot of experience, but not too many games with the Costa Rican team. So going back to our lineup, I mean, like you said, Keylor Navas, Christian Gamboa, Giancarlo. The problem with Giancarlo, with Gonzalez, he's not playing that many minutes. See, in Costa Rica, you cannot go too deep into the bench. We don't have too many players. I mean, if something happens to Brian Ruiz, or if something happens to Keylor Navas or Giancarlo Gonzalez, then we're going to have a tough time because we don't have that many players that you can think about. And Celso Borges, he'll change. I mean, if something happens to Brian Ruiz, you're going to see Celso Borges playing in his position and probably get somebody like Randall Lasso Feifa or David Guzman, which is having a really, really good career right now. He's playing really good, and but it's not too many players. So that's probably the most important thing for us right now is to get save the team in a moment where you don't have Brian Ruiz in his best time, or like you say, Cristian Bolaños. We don't even know if he's gonna make it or not. I mean, it's really tough. It's really tough because Oscar Ramirez, he's been playing with the same team all his 3 or 4 years with the Costa Rican national team, and he haven't tried too many players, and that's when you think, well, what happened if something happens to Brian Ruiz or Keylor Navas or Cristian Bolaños or Johan Venegas? I mean, you don't have too many guys in the bench that you can count on.
Okay. I want to ask you this now from a different standpoint, because we've talked about some of the Costa Rican teams that are out there. Actually, one you mentioned, Alajuelense, you mentioned Herediano, but there's one team that is probably the biggest of them all in Costa Rica, and that's Saprissa. And obviously there are a couple of teams from Saprissa on this Costa Rican side, but the team is also littered with many names from MLS here in the United States, such as Francisco Calvo, Ronald Matarita, like you had mentioned before, Rodney Wallace, David Guzman, who's over at the Portland Timbers. There are a lot of American-based players on this team, as well as Costa Rican-based and European-based. With everything that's happened with the U.S. Soccer Federation, you know, I'm sure everyone in the world's been keeping an eye on that, on all of that talk. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on the effects of these players playing in MLS. Does coming to MLS advance their potential in their career? Does it kind of keep it stagnant? Would they get the same benefit playing in Costa Rica, or is there a benefit for these players coming to MLS and playing with the players that are based here in this country?
Well, most of the players that go to the MLS, first of all, they're thinking about making more money. Obviously, in Costa Rica, a really good player probably makes $4,000 a month. I mean, if you go to the MLS and if you're David Guzman or one of those players, you're probably making $200,000 a year, and they're never going to make the money here. So that's probably the first thing they think about is, you know, make sure they're going to make good money. But not only that, they think that, or we all think that the Europe teams pay a lot of attention to the MLS, and it's probably easier to go to Europe if you play in the MLS. As far as the league, I mean, the MLS is really good. I mean, they've been proved for the last 20 years that they're doing really good. It's not like before when we didn't have soccer in the U.S. and it was really tough. I mean, 20 years ago, if you go to the U.S. to play soccer, you're done. Your career is done. Now that's different. You got young guys going to the MLS. Ronald Matarita is one of those guys. I mean, he's going to be in the World Cup. He's one of the best players that we have playing on the left. And he's really young. So the MLS is good for the Central America players, for Costa Rica players. I mean, they not only make good money, but they're in really good teams. They have really good competition. As far as the way they work and the MLS is different than Costa Rica, it's more professional. You have to stay healthy. You have to play and work hard to get minutes. And that's probably one of the best things we get from the players that they're in the MLS right now. Exactly that. I mean, they're in really good shape because that's the way you have to be if you want to play in the MLS. And that doesn't happen in Costa Rica.
You know, you're talking about the wages that, you know, players get. And, you know, I think the biggest one that stands out is Keylor Navas. I mean, that guy's making like, what, $4 million a year, Jorge?
Yeah, probably more than that. Obviously, he's at Real Madrid. But thinking about the players, I mean, especially in the MLS, I mean, it's a big difference between the MLS and the Costa Rican League. The best player here probably makes $6,000-$7,000 a month. And they make a lot of money in the MLS. Without going to Europe, is probably the best league where they can play and get minutes, because we got Mexico. Obviously, in Mexico, they make a lot of money. But Mexico is not being good for the Costa Rican players. So actually, after Jafet Soto back in the 90s, we haven't had a good, really good player in Mexico. And that surprised me because we're too close, and they get to see the Costa Rican players all the time. But it's not happening. It's not happening. But the MLS, especially with the work that Kurt Morsink is doing, I don't know if you guys remember, Kurt Morsink is a Costa Rican guy that used to play for DC United. He retired, and now he's a agent. And he's the one taking all the Saprissa players and Herediano players to the MLS. And that's one of the things that has been helping. And actually, if you pay attention to the last games for the qualifications, players like David Guzman, Kendall Waston, Ronald Matarrita, Rodney Wallace, Christian Bolaños, Johan Venegas, they were all playing for the Costa Rican team. They were the starters, and they all played in the MLS. I mean, they were in really good shape and everything else. It's probably not the best league to play. You'd want to see all your players in the MLS, but at least it's better than playing in Costa Rica.
Oh, no, of course. And of course, I think for many of them as well, you know, it's probably better to not play in Europe at all. I mean, you have some players in Europe, but, you know, some of them are not even getting minutes, as you mentioned. So, yeah, obviously, you know, one player that is getting minutes. I do have two questions for my final segment. The first one's obviously Keylor Navas. I mean, obviously, the 2014 World Cup changed him completely. You know, he was at Levante, you know, got this superstar move to Real Madrid where he's really, you know, he displaced Iker Casillas as the starting goalkeeper for Real Madrid, and he's been phenomenal. I mean, he's won everything, I think, at Real Madrid, you know, La Liga, Champions League, Super Cup, Club World Cup. You know, many people can regard him as maybe the best goalkeeper in the world or in Spain. You know, it depends on the type of opinions. And just my first question, you know, how important is Keylor Navas' performances for Real Madrid? How is it important for the Costa Rican public? You know, how important is it to see Keylor Navas do so well at Real Madrid for the last 4 years?
Well, to me, it's the confidence. No, it's not. Well, if we talk about Keylor Navas playing for the Costa Rican national team, if you play for the team and you get Keylor Navas to be in the same locker room talking to you, telling you how to play, how to defend, how to move, the timing of the game and everything else. I mean, everything that he learned in Europe right now, in Spain, especially with the Real Madrid, is helping a lot our players. But that's when you think, what happened if something happens to Keylor Navas? Keylor Navas is our Leo Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, you don't have that guy, and then you know you're in trouble, okay? Because it's not the same with our goalkeepers that we have. But everything that he did, the way he grew up and in Pérez Celedón and went to Saprissa, when he went to Spain, he wasn't the same Keylor Navas that you see right now. I mean, he went to Albacete. He has to wait 1 year to get minutes and then move to Levante and then to the Real Madrid after the 2014 World Cup, after what he did. I mean, it's not really easy to get to the Real Madrid where you have Iker Casillas and knowing that you're Keylor Navas, a guy from Central America and Spain, you know how the media is. I mean, actually, every day we have to read something about Keylor Navas getting traded, Keylor Navas getting out of the Real Madrid, Keylor Navas is not good enough for Real Madrid, and we all know that he's good. I mean, he's been proving that game after game, that he's Keylor Navas from Costa Rica.
Would you consider him, where would you put him as maybe one of the best goalkeepers in the world, or would you?
Probably maybe in the top five. I don't want to say he's the best.
No,
I would like to say he's the best, but I'd probably say he's in the top five. Huh?
Go ahead.
De Gea, to me, is a really good goalkeeper, and he probably ended up being at Real Madrid. But there is three or four guys right there with Keylor Navas, I'll say he's probably in the top five.
Definitely. Of course, I agree 100%. And of course, just my last question, and before I pass it over to Joe, I mean, you know, I think many people are well aware of this Costa Rican team, you know, with the star players like Keylor Navas, like Brian Ruiz, Joe Campbell, Marco Ureña, you know, Celso Borges, obviously, Deportivo La Coruña. But I mean, I guess I could pose this to you. I mean, if you had to pick a starting 11 for this Costa Rican side at the World Cup, you know, what is it? And what do you think we should expect from this Costa Rican side that maybe many people aren't well aware of, maybe in Europe or in South America, that haven't seen the qualifiers? You know, what's something that we have to watch out for when we watch this Costa Rica team?
Well, especially the way we play in defense. I mean, Costa Rica in offense is probably not that good right now, but our defense is tough. If we get people like Oscar Duarte to get healthy again, Oscar Duarte plays for Espanyol in Barcelona. Michael Umaña, which is one of the guys with more experience, he played in the MLS, he played in Europe. He was one of the best players in Brazil 2014. Those type of guys that you know they're gonna come out and help the team. I can tell you probably the starting lineup right now with Keylor Navas, con Cristian Gamboa, Michael Umaña, Oscar Duarte, Giancarlo Gonzalez, Brian Oviedo, which is one of the guys that has a lot of experience. He didn't play the last World Cup in Brazil. He got hurt like a month before. And he didn't play. That's the reason you guys saw Junior Diaz playing on the left. But Brian Oviedo is good right now. He's healthy. He's getting a lot of minutes. Then we got David Guzman. We got Kendall Waston. We got Celso Borges, Cristian Bolaños, Johan Venegas, Marco Ureña, Brian Ruiz. I mean, that's the team, and those are the players you're going to see in the World Cup. It's going to be too many surprises. And Oscar Ramirez doesn't like that, doesn't like the surprises. He's not working with two or three young kids that you're going to see in the World Cup. That's not going to happen. We can be talking about 14 or 15 players, and are the same players that play in Brazil.
Now, I want to look forward with the last segment for Costa Rica here, and I want to ask you this, Jorge. The bar has been set pretty high for Costa Rica, given their success at the 2014 World Cup, making it all the way to the quarterfinals. And it's tough to gauge future success based on the past. But my question to you is, what would be considered by the Costa Rican fans, by the Costa Rican media, and even by the Costa Rican players and coaches as a successful World Cup for them in 2018?
To go to the second round, I mean, if we go to the second round, I think that's good enough, especially thinking about the teams you're going to face in that second round. I mean, if we do go to the second round, we're going to be talking about probably Germany, if we finish second, and I mean, that's it. You know that playing a team like Germany, I mean, it's going to be really tough. Even the way they have those groups, Mexico will probably, if they go second, just like Costa Rica, they'll probably have to face Brazil. So not only for Costa Rica, for CONCACAF, it's going to be really tough. And if any team makes it to the second round, I think we have to all be happy.
I agree. Now, in dreaming in the future, what would a Costa Rican World Cup mean to the people of Costa Rica?
Everything, everything. I mean, yeah, Costa Rica, we have, our life here is soccer, football. We think football all the time. I mean, everybody talks about football. You get a taxi cab, you get in the bar, I mean, you go to the train, you go to church. Everybody knows about soccer. Everybody knows about every single player. Everybody is a football coach here in Costa Rica. And I mean, that's our life. I mean, people cry if we lose. People celebrate when we win. Doesn't matter if it's against a big team or not. I mean, we get a win in the World Cup, even one win, and you can see the streets, everybody with a Costa Rican jersey on, celebrating. I mean, there's parties everywhere. This is our life. I mean, nothing is more important in Costa Rica than football and our national team.
Right. So, Jorge, I do want to thank you for joining us tonight and breaking down the Costa Rican national team on their journey to the 2018 World Cup. Rob, I want to thank you as well for joining me tonight and giving us a great interview on one of the super Cinderella stories from the 2014 World Cup, and looking forward to seeing them possibly reproduce that magic in 2018 in Russia. So, for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network, this was your World Cup preview for Costa Rica. I am your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening, and good night.